Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Good morning to you and welcome to CBS This Morning. It's Thursday, June 3rd, 2021. I'm Gayle King with Anthony Mason and Tony DiCoppo. Here we go. We're going to begin with this. President Biden, not crazy, is taking a big new step to get more Americans vaccinated to reach a highly publicized goal that may now be in doubt. About 63% of American adults have had at least one COVID shot, more than 162 million of us. That number needs to grow by more than 18 million to reach Mr. Biden's goal of 70% by the 4th of July.
The president has declared June a national month of action and is promoting a blitz of new giveaways to try to reverse falling vaccination rates. Weijia Zhang is at the White House. Weijia, what's he offering, folks?
Good morning, Anthony. All kinds of things. You know, some states have already been using giveaways as incentives to encourage people to get vaccinated. And now the White House is partnering with several businesses to try to boost the vaccine rate. That means people who get their shots at CVS have a chance at winning Super Bowl tickets or free cruises. Fans who get vaccinated at Major League Baseball games could also get free tickets. And yes, guys, free booze for adults 21 and over from Anheuser-Busch. With the president selling the slogan, get a shot and have a beer. He also announced that four of the country's biggest daycare providers will offer free drop-in childcare for parents getting their shots. This all-out effort comes amid concerns that the average daily vaccination rate is just over 1 million doses a day, down from its mid-April peak of an average of around 3.3 million doses. A vaccination campaign could be especially important in the South, which is lagged behind in getting shots in arms. For example, six southern states have less than one-third of their population fully vaccinated. President Biden, the First Lady, and Vice President Harris are expected to hit the road for the final push and what they are calling the We Can Do It Tour, which will focus on education and outreach. Gayle.
Weijia, thank you. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky joins us now. Good morning to you, Dr. Walensky. It's good to see you.
Good morning, Gayle. Thanks for having me.
So here we go. The Biden administration is calling June the month of action. You know, June is normally weddings, graduations, Father's Day, but now month of action, they're saying people get your vaccine. And we just heard in Weijia's piece all the incentives that are being offered. Anything from donuts, which, by the way, I did claim, guns, alcohol, sports tickets, free daycare. What do you think of all these incentives, number one? And number two, do you think they're working?
You know, June is going to be the month of weddings and the month of vaccination. So I'm really excited for the month of campaigning for vaccination ahead. And, you know, I think we need to understand that people may have not gotten vaccinated to date for various reasons. It may not have been easy. It may not have been convenient. They may not have had the incentive that they wanted or needed. Or they may have questions about the science and how quickly we were able to get three safe and effective vaccines. So really what this month is going to be about is meeting people where they are, understanding what they need in order to get vaccinated, the information that they need, the resources that they need, the access that they need.
Well, they're certainly they're making it easy and certainly giving access. We keep hearing that we need to reach 70%. Why is the 70% number so important?
You know, we want to get the majority of America vaccinated. And after we get to 70%, my goal is going to be to get to 80%. I think what we really understand is that this virus is an opportunist, and it will go to places where people are not vaccinated. And so you are safe if you are vaccinated. You are not safe if you are not vaccinated. And my job is to keep America safe. So we will work to get to 70% on June 4th, and then we will continue to work to get beyond that.
I like the part where you're saying you're safe if you are vaccinated, because just so you know, all of us sitting at the table are vaccinated. A lot of people are starting to go back to work, and some of your coworkers will not be vaccinated. How concerned should we be? I got in a cab the other day. The driver wasn't vaccinated. It made me very nervous. Go to a movie theater. You're sitting with people, they're not vaccinated. How should we handle this? How worried should we be? I know that it's not safe for them as it is for us, but what about us who are vaccinated, being around those people?
So for those of us who are vaccinated, we have seen in study after study now, not just the clinical trials, but in the real world settings, that these vaccines are protecting more than 90 to 95% of people from getting any disease at all. They're even better at protecting against severe disease and hospitalization. So for the most part, nothing's 100% foolproof, but for the most part, if you are vaccinated and you don't have an immunosuppressing disease, for example, you really are safe from potential disease around you. We've also seen that these vaccines are working against the variants that are circulating here, and that's a really important component as well.
Should companies require their employees who are coming back to work be vaccinated?
You know, I think that that's going to have to be at the individual company level. Certainly, there may be some places where companies feel like that would be the best way to go, that people would be safer, that people would feel safer coming back into the workplace. So that we're going to leave at the company level.
And I'm almost embarrassed to ask you this, but on TikTok, there's a video going around right now. Have you seen it? And somebody did it to me. You put the coin on your arm. If it stays there, it means that there's a chip in your arm. It's a big thing that's going on TikTok right now. Can you just put that to rest and say how ridiculous it is? That we are not being
ridiculous. Injected
with chips. Is what I want
we
you to
We are not
talk.
Being injected with chips. What we're being injected with is this incredible scientific breakthrough that keeps us safe and is effective against something that has killed hundreds of thousands of Americans over the last 15 months.
What concerns you now as we sit here today, this third day of June? I know you want us to get vaccinated, but other than that, what are you worried about?
I am worried about what's happening around the world. I'm worried about variants, if we have continued circulating virus. I'm worried that there will be people who don't believe that this vaccine will protect them and that we are relying on each and every individual to step up.
All right, Dr. Walensky, we thank you. We saw you throwing out the ball the other day. On a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give yourself?
I'm going for like an 8.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you. Bye.
I think that's at least an 8.
Yeah, it got pretty close.
Yeah, not bad at all. I'll go with a 9. How about that?
There you go.
All right, we have new information this morning on 2 more cyber attacks targeting New York City's subway system and a ferry service for summer resorts in Massachusetts. This follows this week's attack on a giant meat processing company that owns dozens of U.S. brands. Jeff Begays reports now on the growing pressure for the U.S. to strike back.
Less than 2 weeks from a summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin, the White House says that all retaliatory options are on the table.
Mr. President, will you retaliate against Russia for this latest ransomware attack?
We're looking closely at that issue.
Meat processing company JBS is trying to get fully up and running after the cyber attack, which the FBI attributed to a Russia-linked ransomware operation known as R-Evil. The FBI says agents are working diligently to bring the threat actors to justice. The hack follows the ransomware attack last month on Colonial Pipeline, which led to the shutdown of the largest U.S. fuel pipeline and sparked panic buying at gas stations. Another ransomware attack Wednesday hit Massachusetts Steamship Authority, which runs ferries to Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard. And the New York subway system confirmed that it suffered a cyber attack in April. The New York Times reports the hack was linked to Chinese hackers, but the damage was contained.
There's really no preferred sector or segment of the economy of these ransomware actors.
Chris Krebs is the former director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency.
What is happening in the world that U.S. companies, U.S. government entities are such popular targets for these hackers?
You know, the unfortunate reality is that ransomware is a business and business is good. And until we can disrupt the profitability of the ransomware business model, these events are going to continue to happen.
Our evil, the prime suspect in the JBS attack, is believed to have stolen hundreds of millions of dollars over the years. JBS is expected to resume production at all of its U.S. facilities. Anthony.
Jeff Begay's in Washington, D.C. Thanks. The future of Benjamin Netanyahu, Israel's longest-serving prime minister and a strong U.S. ally, is in serious doubt this morning. His government is about to be toppled by a former partner who has barely enough allies on his side for now to take power. Elizabeth Palmer has covered Israel for many years. Liz, good morning.
Good morning. This is a real blow to Benjamin Netanyahu, who's now been the prime minister of Israel for a record 12 years. The man who looks likely to replace him is the right-winger Naftali Bennett, a former defense minister and successful software entrepreneur. But he's going to have to share power with other party leaders, the powerful centrist Yair Lapid, and the man on the right here, Mansour Abbas, from an Islamist party representing Israeli Arabs. Now, this is historic. It is the first time an Arab party will join an Israeli governing coalition. When the deal was announced last night, anti-Netanyahu crowds danced in the streets. During the election in March, they had mobilized to highlight the fact that the prime minister was on trial for corruption and fraud. But Netanyahu has equally devoted supporters who believe that he's kept them safe in a hostile region, and they applauded his response to rocket attacks on Israel in May by Hamas, with a major military operation that left parts of Gaza in ruins. Now, a word of caution here. This epic political fight is actually not over. Already, Benjamin Netanyahu is doing his utmost to undermine the coalition. He tweeted this morning that legislators who are going to have to vote on it taking power should oppose what he called this dangerous left-wing government. So it ain't over till it's over. Tony?
Hard to call it a left-wing government, but he's doing so. Liz Palmer, thank you very much. Investigators in Florida released body camera footage of a wild shootout between deputies and a boy and girl. The Volusia County Sheriff's Office says the children shot at the deputies for more than half an hour Tuesday night before the deputies returned fire. Manuel Bojorquez has more on this story, and we do warn you, the video is disturbing.
Shooting out the rear window toward my direction. Stand by.
That's Sergeant Donnie Maxwell taking cover behind a tree. He's taking fire from a 12-year-old boy and a 14-year-old girl from inside the house. Police say the two children had fled from a juvenile home northeast of Orlando and broken into this unattended house, finding several large firearms. When police arrived, the children opened fire.
Put the gun down now!
Yes, ma'am. Let's just hold on.
10-4, they're shooting at me.
At one point in the 9-minute edited video, Maxwell, with his gun drawn, mutters to himself, appearing to pray for a peaceful outcome.
Don't make me do this. Don't do this.
More than 30 minutes into the standoff, aerial footage then appears to capture police opening fire. The flashing dots are the bullets coming from the officers assembled behind the tree. Police say they started shooting, striking the girl and wounding her after she came outside pointing a shotgun at the officers. The 12-year-old boy, who had been carrying an AK-47, surrenders, and the officers rush to administer first aid to the girl.
Whoever's got a med kit, some type of med kit, I need it up here now in the garage.
None of the officers were injured despite having multiple rounds fired at them, but the female suspect was transported to a local hospital where she underwent surgery and is in stable condition. In a statement, the juvenile facility where the children were staying said, "These children are in desperate need of care in the appropriate setting, which is a higher level of care than we provide." For CBS This Morning, Manuel Bojorquez, Miami.
kudos to the officers who clearly did not want to fire in that situation, even though they were under attack. This morning, Tokyo marked 50 days until the start of Summer Olympics. Much of Japan is still under a COVID state of emergency, and many Japanese say these games should be called off. As Raimi Innocencio reports, the chief Olympics organizer says the games that were supposed to be held last year cannot be postponed again.
As a veiled Olympic choir sang with curtain-like COVID masks, a debatable attempt at artistry, Tokyo unveiled this year's gold, silver, and bronze medals and winner's podium with pomp. But popular protest has engulfed the Olympic bubble, with Tokyo 2020 president Seiko Hashimoto forced to address concerns. All athletes will be in a bubble to defend their health, she said. And if an outbreak should happen, we must be prepared to go without any spectators.
Obviously, it's a tug of war between the Japanese public opinion.
Japan's societal expert Seijiro Takeshita says people need to get vaxxed.
Can Japan actually accelerate enough to make sure everyone's protected in the next 50 days?
I personally think it would be very difficult.
The pace of vaccination is slow. The goal, a distant 1 million each day. Currently, half that. More infections and deaths are happening now compared to when Tokyo froze the games in March 2020. And Japan's top COVID advisor said it's not normal to hold the Olympic Games in a situation like this. A state of emergency just extended to June 20th now blankets much of Japan. Around 10,000 Olympic volunteers of 80,000 have now quit, as Tokyo expects 15,000 athletes from about 200 countries and thousands of coaches, officials, and journalists.
What is the concern that when all of those tens of thousands of people go home, that we might see another wave of COVID?
That would be the worst case scenario for the Tokyo Olympics.
As the first international athletes now arrive in Japan from Australia's women's softball team, no Olympian knows if they'll fly home carrying a medal or, as some medical experts warn, carrying COVID. For CBS This Morning, Raimi Innocencio, Hong Kong.
Thank you for listening to the CBS This Morning podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to get daily podcast originals.
You can watch the CBS This Morning broadcast Monday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on your local CBS station or live on the CBS All Access app.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.